live from Portland. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Big exciting news. Maybe we'll talk about it later this hour.
Make your way.
503, it's more exciting for us than it is for you. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up in mere moments, we pay a visit to the Ministry of Truth. Bottom of the hour, we'll touch Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Top five. Scotty J will join us for that. And we'll have the first installment of Let's Find the Worst News Story in All of Creation. 503-733. Why are people calling with vagina information? Oh, I'm sorry. Virginia information. Sorry? Sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, your president, prophet, seer, and
Reverend.
Thank you.
From the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Ryan.
Get out of that.
A girl has been crushed by a beach log. We're going to hear stories like this during the summer. This is when they happen.
Dun, dun, dun,
a 6-year-old girl hospitalized after being crushed by a log at Cannon Beach. The fire department said the girl and her family were visiting, sitting on a log near the water. Bad move.
Sounds like the parents were keeping a good eye on her.
A wave came up suddenly and swept the family off. The log rolled over the girl. It was about 20 feet long. It weighed more than a ton.
What, are they from Kansas where there's no water?
Apparently so.
Does it say where they're from?
It does not, no.
Here's a dumb question. Does anybody know if the city or the state puts up signs that says, these logs will kill you, stay away from them?
It doesn't matter. Stupid people do stupid things all the time.
Yeah, that's true. I guess there's no safeguard against that.
No. Well, Gresham Landmark is getting an extraordinary makeover starting today. It used to be the Pink Palace, a longtime porn shop. At 181st between East Burnside and Southeast Stark, it was a monument to Gresham business. It closed recently after 20 years. It was purchased by a purchased by. I've been listening to Bo Deedle.
The purchification of the
of the porn shop
of the storeality
was done by a public spirited developer for a lease to the Center for Family Success and a hub for educational opportunities. And positive family activities for children.
What? I don't understand. So some family group bought a porn store?
Yeah.
Sons of bitches.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to have positive activities for children there.
Porn is a positive activity. Maybe not for children, but for the rest of us.
Well, the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office is donating inmate labor for this unusual project. The work crews have already begun the renovation process. What a dirty little job that must be.
Labor?
I barely knew her.
This was a porn shop for 20 years.
You know, I resent that. I resent, sir, the makeover of a porn shop into a place that's an outlet for healthy activities for youth. I won't have it. You know, it's like that porn shop downtown that they turned into like a Verizon store or something. That's just not right. Rick Emerson votes. No, it's not that. What is it? It's right by that dentist place. You have a similar building by Borders.
Oh, or it used to say, go to sleep.
Exactly.
Permanently.
Which is
you'll never wake up. That was my favorite sign in Portland.
Is it safe? I don't know. We're all over the map here. Anyway, blah, 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 porn store, blah, blah, blah. All right.
So there's a porn store downtown next to a dentist office.
There was a porn store on the corner down there, and it was right by Borders. And now it's not Verizon, but it's gone, and it's replaced by some cell phone company now, and... I don't know. The porn store is a little bit of local color. That's like there's this place in Spokane. It may or may not still be there. There was a place in Spokane called Miss Kitty's. And Miss Kitty's, which is one of the oldest adult establishments in Spokane. And Miss Kitty's was really a landmark. And I think the last thing I heard, I think they were getting ready to get rid of it. Which is unfortunate. It was sort of like the Mary's Club of Spokane, Washington. So,
not right. Less reason to go there, I suppose.
It's true. Really, now you just go for the Nazis.
Okay, let's see here. The death toll has climbed to 33 in the shootings at Virginia Tech.
Jesus.
And apparently, the first place he went to, the dorm, he killed two people, and most of them were killed in the second location, which had the classrooms.
That'll never
be topped. So he was looking for his girlfriend, apparently.
Yeah, that 33, that's a benchmark. That won't be topped. People said that after Columbine, but you know what? On a related subject, really, if you want to creep yourself out, if you really, really, really want to creep yourself out, set aside about 10 minutes out of your day sometime and read the full Wikipedia. And people can say all they want about Wikipedia, but Wikipedia, like the Inquirer, is largely correct about things, especially historical incidents. Set aside 10, 12 minutes and read the Wikipedia entry on the Columbine massacre. That will freak your ass out. I mean, that will, apart from the fact that it's some nutcase kids who managed to keep this death plot secret for a year and then, like, killed a bunch of people. I forget how many they killed, 12, 13, something,
yeah,
like that.
Something like that.
If you go back and you read through that Columbine case, there are segments of that plot that those kids hatched that are terrifying. I mean, apart, above and beyond the terror of the 12 kids and the trench coats and that creepy surveillance video, which never becomes less creepy, no matter how many times you see it, of them walking through the cafeteria and, like, stopping to have, like, a soda while they've got, like, a Mac-10 in the other hand. That's creepy, and it never stops being creepy. If you read the most terrifying thing about that Columbine case, we're talking about this Virginia thing, is that Eric Harris, who was apparently the more technical-minded of the two, spent years, or not years, but a year, creating these big propane bombs that they put all over the school, and I think only one of them ever went off because he had a timing, his timing or his wiring was incorrect. But, you know, the deal that they had planned for these bombs to go off in the schools and in the parking lot, and they had set the bombs up in such a fashion that one would go off after another in a certain order, and that it would funnel all of the students in the school out through one set of double doors, outside of which he and Dylan would have been waiting, and they would have mowed everybody down with machine guns. The bombs were set up such that it would go off in order, and everybody would run and be funneled down one hallway out one set of doors, and then they just would have blasted everybody all to hell when they came out. If the bombs at Columbine had gone off the way that they had been wired to, in other words, if they had not been wired incorrectly, the death toll at Columbine, they say, would have been like 400 people. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, it will warp your brain. There are people walking around this world that are just broken toys. You know what I mean? There's a whole lot of people walking around this country that are just broken inside and aren't ever going to be fixed by anything. It's best not to think about it, I guess, but I mean, because it'll just weird you out. If you start thinking about the number of people who live in your city who are probably just crazy and unstable and just waiting for one bad day to push them over into Killville, so which is apparently what this the guy is doing.
So, all right.
Well, do we have more news on this?
Well, no, that's it for now. I think we should talk about Bill Clinton for a while.
Can we, please?
Because he is in Bill Clinton. I mean, he's in San Francisco.
Somebody else was. Bill Clinton's usually the one in someone.
He's in San Francisco, continuing his crusade against obese children.
Our goal is to stop and then reverse the rise in childhood obesity and its attendant consequences, principally manifest now in rising rates of diabetes.
Something has to be done about the food they eat.
Four or more of those contractors bring in things that kids may like to eat, but they're not particularly nutritious.
Seriously, I think I'll not take a page from. I think I'll not take advice from Bill Clinton about what I ought to be eating. Maybe I'll take a lesson from him on moral turpitude as well. All right.
You want me to continue?
Why don't you do one more?
All right. I'll
People love
more.
Hearing your voice, Tim.
I'm sure they do. Japan's leading toilet manufacturer, Toto, is offering free repairs to 180,000 toilets after some of them caught fire.
How does a toilet catch fire?
Well, this is an electric bidet. You know the Japanese have to design things better than we have.
They're a crafty people.
Right. Their toilets are far more advanced than ours. This is the Toto Z series that is catching fire. Fortunately, nobody using the toilets when the fire broke out.
Okay, but again, even if it's a bidet, how does it catch fire?
Well, the fire would just be just under your buttocks.
That's got to be a good thing. Wait, hold on, I got to use my bidet. Imagine if you're some guy sitting down to use a bidet.
And it becomes a flamethrower.
Imagine if you're some guy, you're sitting down to use a bidet, and instead of a gentle stream of water, it's just fire. That's the
best. Like something out of a Roadrunner cartoon.
Really, seriously.
Wile E. Coyote.
And the bidet of fire. Harry Potter and the bidet of fire.
Wile E. Coyote uses the Toto toilet.
I mean, there's nothing in your brain that would train you for that. There's nothing in your brain that could prepare you for sitting down on a bidet and then just having it shoot fire into your buttocks.
Well, Toto is a pioneer in these high-tech toilets.
Apparently, yes. They're breaking new ground every day.
Now, the famous Z-series, which features a pulsating massaging spray.
And fire.
A power dryer.
And fire.
So the dryer part must be it.
So good.
You're just doing things in the wrong order. A tornado wash. And a lid that opens and closes automatically.
Also fire that pours into your anus.
They're not sold outside of Japan, though.
Well... we're all poorer for that. Fantastic. Thank you, Tim.
Oh, you're welcome.
God bless you,
sir. Well, I got to start preparing these all-important newscasts with the Tom Likas show.
Tim Riley heard at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock,
a little while.
And 7 o'clock. We'll check in once more later this hour with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Wait, this doesn't feel like water. This doesn't feel like water massaging me. This feels more like, what's that? It's like an F word. Rhymes with higher. What is this feeling on my buttocks? It's not water. It's a fire. That's what it feels like. Fire.
I barely knew her.
All right. It's 503-733-297. Why don't you roll your eyes at me? You're just angry that you're wrong about the Britney thing.
I am not. I found a picture of her.
This email says, tell Sarah to calm down. It's okay to be wrong from time to time. Tara, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
I just wanted to say I think that Sarah's right and that that is Britney Spears, because at the end she totally goes back to how she normally is. With her talking, not all stupid like a valley girl.
That's what I was talking, and then when she's smacking on her gum and you can see her teeth and everything.
I haven't been able to see the video. I've only heard the audio, so I can't see it. I have only Sarah's word to go on that it is.
All I have to say is if I saw her on the street corner, I'd probably smack that little wig off her head.
Fantastic. I'd pay money to see that.
Yeah, and another thing about the Cannon Beach with the driftwood.
Yeah.
I was just in Cannon Beach this weekend, and they have a Cannon Beach magazine. And in the magazine, it has safety rules about being around the water. And one of them is to not be on the driftwood because it could squish you.
Well, and also because, you know, it's a 1,000-pound log. I mean,
I never thought of it either, though, and I grew up in Oregon.
Really? It seems every year, don't we have these stories about people being steamrolled by a 1,000-pound piece of wood?
Honestly, I've never heard one, and I even said when I read that, I was like, oh, are they that stupid that you have to put it in the magazine?
Yeah.
I never thought of it, but it could totally happen, I guess.
All right. Are we going to be seeing you on Thursday at the listener party?
You know, I would go, but my daughter's in the hospital having surgery, won't get out till Friday.
How old is your daughter?
She's 5.
Now, can I ask what the nature of the surgery is? It's not my business, but may I ask?
Oh, she had some tubes in her bladder replaced.
Oh, that's no good. Okay.
No.
So, now...
I would make it if I didn't have to spend the night in the hospital,
all
for
right.
Sure.
Well, see, now I feel like a dick. Now, there's no way I can possibly...
Okay.
There's nothing I can... Like, if your daughter was 17 and she was, like, getting her nose done or something, I'd be like, screw that. All right, Tara. Well, you'll be there in spirit.
Yes,
all
totally.
Right.
And I listen to you every day.
Thank you, Tara.
Okay,
right.
Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. By the way, we want to say hello to Myla. Myla, I barely knew her. Myla, who I ran into on Hawthorne yesterday. I was going into a restaurant. I was going to do Oasis to get myself a slice. And I was on the phone outside, and a woman was kind of staring at me. And I walked in, and she's like, I don't want to stare, but I listen to your show. And I'm like, hey, and she was great and whatever. So,
awesome.
So hello, Myla.
And I met a listener named Robert at the Safeway on 39th and Powell.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he a checker?
He was a checker, yeah. And I was with my friend Kyle, and we were buying... It was Saturday.
Were you buying something trashy?
Totally. We bought salads and sparks.
Okay.
It was so trash.
Fantastic.
I know.
Hello, Robert. Let's see. MJ, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
I don't think
he's
there.
Okay. I don't understand calls like that where clearly he was there.
Maybe, you know.
Until I said hello.
No, it makes that weird sound when you pick up. Maybe people think you're hanging up on them.
MJ?
Yes.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, we're just doing a radio show here, MJ.
Just doing the show.
What's up, brother?
Well, I haven't heard you report this about the Virginia deal.
Is this going to be something made up?
No, my brother is back there.
Okay.
And the reason between the delay or why people didn't know about the 7 a.m. shooting was that they thought they caught the guy. They had locked down the dorm.
Right, yeah, they thought he was in the dorm, and he, meanwhile, had slipped out and had gone across campus to a classroom.
So is that where the picture is of them handcuffing the other Asian guy?
Is it that they thought they'd contained him, or that they thought they had captured him? Because there's a photo of some Asian guy in cuffs who's not the guy.
Right, both, actually. They thought they contained him, and he had the guy in cuffs.
Yeah, so apparently they... It's a bad day for the cops. Apparently, they had some other Asian guy in cuffs and therefore figured that, like, it was the guy. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just hope it wasn't, like, campus cops or something.
Well, whoever it was, if you listen now, you can hear the sound of lawsuits being filed. So, all right. Thank you, MJ.
Hey, have a good day.
Thank you, too. And that's MJ. Paul, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
Hey, every beach access in Oregon has these huge 3-foot by 5-foot signs that tell you about sneaker waves and logs in the surf and don't pet the baby seals and when clamming season is and don't litter and
yep.
everything and so forth and so on.
No, it's true. It's like when I lived in, you know, like in San Diego, you go to La Jolla, and there'd be these seal beaches. And there were huge signs that showed, like, a hand coming into the frame, and then, like, the silhouette of a seal with its mouth open and huge, pointy, razor-sharp teeth. With a big, like, red slash through it. Like, seals will take off your hand. Don't pet them.
Yeah, there's pictures of, like, a sneaker wave, and there's pictures of driftwood and what crabs are good in clams and clamming season and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sad that anything happens to anybody, but we have these stories every single year.
It's like last year with the two elderly ladies that were...
Yeah, it's like
walking on the beach and got swept out by a sneaker wave during a storm.
Yeah, the water will kill you. I mean, nature will kill you given the slightest chance or opportunity. Yes, sir.
And that toilet that Tim was talking about?
Yes.
It's pretty high-tech, man. It's a regular toilet.
What, with all the fire and all, uh-huh?
Well, yeah, it's a regular toilet, but it's also a bidet. Plus, it has a heated seat. Plus, it has a hair dryer to, you know, dry your backside.
Really?
So you get all that in one.
All right. Well, that and third-degree burns, apparently.
Oh, yeah, and it becomes the bidet of fire.
The Japanese really are eons ahead of us in most things.
Okay.
Thank you. That's Paul. Heidi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Yeah, I was calling to tell you about those toilets also, and it's so funny you mention it because I'm a realtor, and the house that I was helping my clients buy had, you know, not the toilet you're talking about, but the brand Toto. So I looked it up, and this toilet is, like, so high-tech. It has a remote control, which you can, you know, have a fresh bowl before you go, but it also costs around $5,000.
It's the toilet of tomorrow.
Yes, and now, it's ridiculous.
Now,
everything.
When you say remote control, is that, how do I put this, is that because if maybe you live with someone who does not always flush,
maybe.
You can hit the button as you are walking toward the bathroom, and so when you get there, it's brand new sparkling water.
Yes, and
that's
you can also hit the remote, and it will put the toilet seat up or down also.
And if you hit the remote, will it warm the toilet seat before you use it?
Yeah, I think so. I just went to the website, and I'm like, this is ridiculous.
That's fantastic. I love that. Here's what I want. Can I just tell you this, since we're talking about, we're actually now engaging in literal toilet humor. not figurative toilet humor, actual literal toilet humor on this.
Right.
I'd like Les Moonves to be aware that right now, toilet talk. you know what I want at my house, though? I have lamented this. I don't. More than any other feature or any other sort of perk that the toilet has, I just want one of those incredibly powerful turbo flush things like they have in public bathrooms.
Yeah.
No matter what's in the bowl, it all goes away. No clogging, no sticking, no jamming. It all, you pull. Because, you know, like when you flush the toilet at home, it's just sort of a, and it gurgles and goes away. You flush the toilet in a public bathroom, and it's like, and it's gone.
Oh, totally.
Gone.
My 2.5-year-old cried because the toilet was so loud, it freaked her out.
That's what I want, just to guarantee that whatever's in there is going to be gone. Yeah.
Right.
I'm with you. All right, God bless you, Heidi.
See ya.
Thank you. That's Heidi. All right, we're so behind, but we should take a break. 503. Mark, porno store talk. Well, how can I pass that up? Okay, we did toilet talk. Let's actually talk about porn.
Back to back.
Hello, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Rick. Just sitting here at work. Yeah, that was driving home. I saw that pink store.
The pink store in Gresham.
Yeah, 181st. I popped in there a couple of times, you know. And,
oh, really?
And I went by. I noticed there was a bus with a bunch of inmates.
Buying something for a friend. Uh-huh.
And they're all picking weeds, you know, fixing it up. And, I mean, it's just terrible. Now I got like 5-6 miles away to go to one of these stores.
Really? Do you have the internet, sir?
Yeah.
If you have, and please, let's keep this clean, but if you have the internet, why do you ever need to go to that store?
I don't know, just for kicks.
Okay, who can argue with that? Thank you.
All right.
That's Mark. All right, fantastic.
How's your woodcock doing? Oh, my darling little woodcock.
Let's take a break. It's 503-733-2970. Come back around the corner with Peter Carlin. Later on, Tim Riley. And then we'll have this face-off for worst story ever. 503-733-2970. Here's Jimmy Eat World. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email us if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up before the top of the hour, the search for the worst story ever. And Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Like us at 3, Dynamike at 7. Scotty, is this Peter? The screen appears oddly blank. It is. Thank you, Hart. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, with a heart full of hate and a head full of creamy frosting, Peter Carlin, TV critic for the Oregonian. Hello, sir.
Hey, hi.
And how was your weekend?
It was fine, thank you.
Was it satisfying and restful?
In fits and starts, yeah, thanks. How was yours? Was it good?
In fits and starts.
Yeah.
That's kind of like saying bric-a-brac. Hey, odds and ends.
Yeah.
If you have a bunch of odds and ends and then you get rid of all but one of them, what do you have left?
You have an empty life.
Well done. All right, thank you. Let's talk Sopranos. So did we know that Johnny Sack had cancer?
We do now.
I mean, is that a thing that was that alluded to, or did they just spring that on us last night?
I can't remember.
Neither can I. And how much time passed between the end of last season and the beginning of this season? Do we know?
It's TV time. It's a certain amount, but it kind of fluctuates.
All right. So Johnny Sack is dead, which disappoints me because he was, apart from Tony, he was my favorite character on that show. And,
yeah.
Just because he just seemed like such a seething ball of resentment just all the time. He was just so tightly wound that I felt he was just sort of a coiled spring all the time, which I thought made him fantastic. And so he's going to be sadly missed by me. It seems like a lot of time must have passed between this season and last one, though, because somehow Christopher found the time to do it, to get an entire feature film made in a Cleaver movie. So
yeah, cheapo, though. Still practically straight to video with just like a minor kind of whatever, so you never know how long it would take.
Although he was able to pull Daniel Baldwin for it, so
that's true.
So how many episodes do we have left before that show bites the dust?
Seven.
So was it you that made this guess? No, somebody else. And this is a person who didn't know any spoilers. But somebody was guessing that Sylvia was the one who was going to get he was going to be the next to go, that he was going to do something, and he was going to be the one to go.
Well, I thought Paulie last night was kind of setting himself up for ill things to happen. I mean, first of all, the part where he has a very loud cell phone conversation in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
And then the part where after Johnny dies, he and they're raising a glass in his memory, he points out isn't it ironic that the same disease that he beat took out Johnny, which is like, because, you know, he had that little brush with
prostate cancer.
Right, which of course is a slightly different, I think, caliber of disease than stage 4, you know, small cell
liver cancer.
Yeah, whatever the hell. No, it was like lung cancer that had metastasized everywhere.
Cancer of the everything.
Cancer of your being.
Of the body. Yeah.
Yes. And so, and I think the looks on people's faces, and I think he's been sort of disingratiating himself with virtually everyone.
And the same with Christopher, too, because there's a lot of talk, and maybe these are all red herrings. There's all this talk that Christopher doesn't come around the strip club anymore.
Yeah.
He's off being a movie guy. He's off trying to apparently stay on the straight and narrow, and he's off to meeting with his sponsor all the time.
And who is one of his sober buddies? He mentioned to his first sober buddy? That would be an FBI agent.
Really?
Yeah.
I must have missed that somehow.
It was just kind of a passing reference.
Oh, I didn't know. Whatever happened to the Juliana Margulies? Did she just vanish in the wind?
She apparently, took off.
All right, okay. So they've just sort of moved on from that. So
they moved on because I think she was part of his binging problem.
And then there's, you know, and then Carmela Soprano, of course, is no fan of Christopher's at this point. And she's, you know, leaning, she's very much on the anti-Christopher bandwagon.
And she was also still can't give up her interest in what in heaven's name did actually happen to Adriana.
Well, and Tony had sort of attempted to buy her off by giving her the house.
Yeah.
But that obviously hasn't worked all that successfully.
Well,
so
she got him off. He got her off his back, but, yeah, you know, she's more than happy to leap onto Christopher's.
I hope. Here's the thing. I'm kind of preparing myself for the fact that The Sopranos, being the kind of show that it is, that it is going to end in a sort of anticlimactic fashion. Because it seems like It seems like that's the nature of the show, is that they don't give you the big build-up and satisfying payoff that maybe a more predictable show would give you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that however this ends, and I don't know how it ends, but however The Sopranos ends, it's probably not going to be in some big bloodbath, and it will probably end on just some variation of the way the first season ended, which is just them having dinner at a restaurant somewhere.
Well, you know, you never know.
I don't. I mean, it could end with everybody dead, you know? Who knows?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Speaking of everybody dead, so tomorrow, not tonight, but tomorrow we're coming up on The Shield again. And boy, that show just gets, I mean, the control and just the discipline that the creators, that Sean Ryan has on that show, to allow things to unspool so correctly and accurately and to pace that show.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you know, and the fall of John Kavanaugh, who was investigating Vic Mackey and who now himself has ended up incarcerated for planting evidence, and just the fall of Vic Mackey from troubled, morally ambiguous cop to just being flat-out obsessed and crazy is just stunning. I mean, I watched last week's episode twice, and it's just amazing how well and how believably they have pulled all of us into that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, there are no words for how well that show is done.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, again, I don't really know anything, but it does seem like at some point, the whole business of Shane Vendrell killing off Lem has got to come out, right? It has to come out.
Yeah, it kind of does. I've seen ahead several weeks.
Okay. Well, I don't want to know anymore. Then don't tell me anything else.
Okay.
And let's see, what else happened last night that was big? There was Entourage. It's funny, because I was thinking about, and I know they're two totally different things, but you wrote a piece about the Don Imus, about that whole Don Imus thing earlier, and I think you wrote it before he'd been fired. I think your piece appeared just after he'd been suspended.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny that it underscores how, and again, as everybody is now legally required to say like 1,000 times, not to defend what he said, but it does underscore... I was thinking about having our big voice guy just produce a liner that said that I would play at the beginning of our show. Not to defend what Don Imus said, just as like a generic disclaimer. It does underscore how much it just all comes down to whether or not something is funny, that you can get away with almost anything if it's funny. Because I was thinking about the character of Ari Gold. And last night, how everything that Ari says is just repellently sexist and bigoted and racist. And directed at people who are gay or handicapped in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And how you compare that with what Imus said and how they just seem, for reasons that you can't necessarily define, just worlds apart from each other.
Yeah, but Ari lost his job, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, but Ari didn't lose his job because he was a bigot.
Plus, also, Ari's fictional. I think that's a subtle distinction you got to make, too.
Ari is fictional, but, I mean, let's be honest. We're all adults. We have to kind of call a spade here. You have to acknowledge the reality.
Yes.
Which is that we all find the stuff that Ari says to be hilarious. I'm not defending Don Imus as such, but I'm saying we would be lying if we said that we didn't find the stuff that Ari said that was racist or sexist funny.
I think often it comes down to the power differential between who is saying what and who they're talking about. And in the case, I think Imus's fatal error was the fact that he took off after and said really mean belittling things about people who are almost, traditionally and powerless, which are, African-American women, who in this case turn out to be, scholars and athletes, actively, doing the things that we want all our kids to do, and maybe possibly to a great extent, from backgrounds that maybe that sort of thing wasn't quite as easily done as others. And yet, here was this, extremely rich white guy, with all the power in the world, belittling them for no apparent reason other than, he didn't understand the way that they looked or thought that there was something.
I think a big part of it is that they were private citizens and not public figures.
And
well.
That, too. Yeah, when you're a public figure, it's kind of like, well, bets are off.
Yeah, he said all kinds of things about people who are either politicians or celebrities,
right,
or whatever.
But let's again think about the amount of power celebrities and politicians have.
Sure.
You step into the arena and you're kind of, all bets are off.
Absolutely.
But for these people, largely I think it was about a guy, that situation, it's a clueless dude who is really, I think in some ways, he probably didn't even mean it the way it came out. He was just trying to come up with some funky cool thing to say to kind of like, I don't know, say something funny about these people who probably he didn't even think of as people. They're just entertainment figures.
Well, that's the thing, and as I think as Don Geronimo said, you know, it's like you can't do 4 hours a day, 5 days a week for 30 years and not have a two-second segment at some point in which you say something stupid.
Exactly. But in this case, it was, you know, so... and that was his thing. I mean, and I got into it with a couple other DJs at a whole other station last week.
What station?
That would be KEX. And okay. They're perfectly nice guys and everything. But I think the place, and my sense was, and they may feel differently, there was a disconnect with us when we started talking about, they were trying to figure out why the very language that that I misused.
Hold on. Is this the, why can black guys say it and white guys can't?
Yeah, it was a little bit of that, you know. Yeah. And, you know, again, it's like, well, and I think this is hard for some people to really get, is if you come from an oppressed class of people, and you manage to, for whatever reason, you take the language of your oppressors and use it yourself, you are taking it away from them. And you could argue that there is something just sort of nihilistic and self-destructive about using the language on yourself, using their weapons on yourself. It either, depending on, you know, and I guess, you know, it's an interesting argument that, you know, that people can and do have. If you're gay and you refer to yourself as queer, as a part of queer culture, are you diminishing yourself by referring to yourself as queer, or are you making it so no one else in their right mind could ever call you queer?
Well, you know, that was Lenny Bruce's whole thing. Is he had that thing about the so-called N-word, where he said that he wanted to use it so much and so frequently that no little black girl would ever cry again because she was called that.
Yeah.
And it's a real dicey proposition,
right,
if you're not black, you know, and especially if you operate under the assumption, which I think is true, that any subculture, any subculture within a culture, like the hip-hop community, for example, it's, I mean, you know, that there are different rules to different subcultures, whether we want to acknowledge that or not,
right,
whether we want to say it's true or not, right or not.
For some reason, I was thinking that Lenny Bruce's name came up in the course of these conversations about Don Imus last week, and I was reminded that the day, I think it was literally the night, on November 22nd, 1963, when you know, President Kennedy was assassinated, he had a show at Carnegie Hall or something, and of course there was that question: was he going to play? Was he not going to play? You know, and he did. He came out on stage, and there was silence, and he sat there silently for a second. This is how I remember the story. And the first thing what is any comedian going to say that day? Second of all, what is someone like Lenny Bruce going to say? And he said, he uttered the name of the guy whose entire act was based on imitating JFK. And he said, Von Meter, that poor son of a bitch.
That's hilarious.
Exactly. Which, you know, but then you wonder, why is it hilarious? I mean, this is a horrible, horrible nation-shaking, world-shaking tragedy that's taken place.
Well, you know what? I do believe that the vast majority of humor, anybody's humor, comes at the expense of someone else.
Mm.
I mean, humor, almost all humor, comes from laughing at someone.
But in a way, though, that joke, that Lenny Bruce joke, is less about, it's not about any particular person as much as it's just about the idea that a guy could make his entire living imitating another guy.
And there is a lot to be said for embracing humor, humor that embraces darkness, too. You know, Sam Kinison had this thing he said one time. He said, he joked about his many failed relationships and his, you know, his horrible track record with women and the fact that he was so poor for so long and so embittered about whatever. And they said, well, why? And he said, you know, he said, the thing is, you either got to laugh or you have to cry, and you just can't cry. That's what he said.
I know, but, you know, there was a real anger and a real unpleasant aspect to him, and I think he left a lot of people feeling like, you know, there were a lot of elaborate, you know, rationalizations or justifications for his stuff, but he really, I mean, he was a guy that I think often, and I can't chapter and verse through his routines at this point, but, you know, that he took off after a lot of very powerless people, including people who, you know, as of the early 90s, you know, during the AIDS crisis, you know, when there were very few answers and a whole lot of people dying, made fun of them for no apparent reason other than that they had a different sexual orientation than his, which led some other gay comedian, I think, or something that I read somewhere, to basically, you know, after the tragic, awful thing happened to Sam Kinison, propose that in fact was actually sort of hilarious. which made me cringe. But on the other hand, you know, in the spirit of Sam Kinison, you think, well, you know, you hoist it upon the old petard.
I do remember that a lot of Kinison's early routines had to do with, you know, how he didn't think drunk driving was such a big deal. It's true. He had this whole thing about drunk driving and about how he's like, there's no other way to get our car back to the house.
Yeah.
And then I remember my friend Dwayne was like, you know, he actually said, this is true. He said, you know, it is kind of hilarious that he gets dusted off by a drunk driver.
Well,
the thing about I'm is my final thought on this is that the thing that was sort of ugly about it and what I think sealed his fate is that A, it wasn't funny, and B, that they were private citizens, and I guess C, that it did look like an old white guy who looked at a group of young black girls and was looking for a way to refer to them, and he rooted around in his brain, and the first phrase that came to his head was that.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that word association, because, you know, he's just an old white guy in a cowboy hat, and that's the first word that came to mind when he looked at some black women. So yeah. That's unfortunate, and that's, I think, what did him in.
Now, he wanted to sound a lot younger and cooler. I think he wanted to sound like he could just sort
exactly.
of wield, sling the lingo, you know?
Exactly.
But right. The problem was he had no clue what he was talking about.
He had no skills to pay the bills, as the urban youth say. What's coming up in the Oregonian, my friend?
Well, I'm sort of in the middle of writing some thumbsucker about what's going on today, and stapling it together with some other things, and it'll either be transcendent and wonderful and meaningful, or complete and utter nonsense. Right now, I'm sort of on the fence.
My God, that's how I describe the show every day, my friend. So
yeah.
All right, Peter Carlin, in print of the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. Thank you, sir.
Hey, my pleasure.
There you go, Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Don't forget, you can hear Tim Riley's news coming up today at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. Will it be flawless and entertaining as always, Tim? You betcha. Fantastic. All right. Email, let's see, this phone call. Guy says his toilet caught on fire. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's 503-733-2970. Do we have to break?
We do.
We have to take a break. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back. Calls, and we'll try to get to this worst story, everything. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Sarah, how long until the music plays?
Like 3.5 minutes.
You think I have time to read 2 news stories and have people vote?
No.
Well, goddammit. Fine! Doesn't matter. It's okay. Think I have time to... 503-733-2970. Rick Emerson Show. Who this?
Hi, this is TJ Africa out in Gladstone. Best show ever, Rick.
Thank you.
And to Sarah, Twin Peaks rules, I think.
I love it.
Thank you, miss.
Where can I get it cheap? I heard it's $44.
I got mine, well, they had it at TD Game Exchange.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's around $39.
Great.
Yeah, so not bad.
Is this the season 2 Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
All right.
And it's awesome because, you know, the first season only had 7 episodes, but this one, it's like $40 and you get 22 episodes.
Now, how many seasons of it were there?
There are 2.
All right, okay. And then, did they answer it? No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but is this the thing where they did 2 seasons and then they did Fire Walk With Me after that, the movie?
Yeah, Fire Walk With Me came out after it.
All right, okay.
But it is a prequel.
How can I help you, teacher?
Oh, I wanted you to lighten up on Clyde, too.
Oh, I love Clyde.
Okay.
But Clyde, you know, Clyde and I have an interesting and loving, if adversarial, relationship sometimes.
Okay. You redeemed yourself, too, with me, with all that you said to Peter about the Imus incident.
Oh, yeah.
When inflammable situations like that happen, it's hard for me to listen to white guys when it's fresh off the press.
Yeah.
I left you alone last week, but I'm glad I picked you up again today.
Well, thank you.
Okay. I caught my bowl afire. I had cleaned it out, had the blue toilet water in it and everything, and I swished it with a brush, and, you know, I'm tidying up, and I sprayed this disinfectant in there. You know, because I'm out in Gladstone, and we have, you know, the mold problem because I live in a woodsy area.
Uh-huh.
to put a spray disinfectant in there.
Right.
And I just lit a candle, and, you know, I've got the bathroom looking all nice and spiffy, and I dropped the match in the bowl. And I'm staring in a panic, you know, I'm wondering, should I flush? If I flush, will flames come up all through the apartment?
You don't want to flush. You don't, would you?
Yeah, I know. I'm so glad I didn't, but boy, my heart was going like crazy.
Now, how did you eventually get the toilet to quit burning?
It just stopped on its own, but it caught fire for quite a bit.
That's fantastic. Would you like to know what would have happened if you'd flushed?
Tell me.
If you had, now, this is based upon my, this is based upon my rudimentary knowledge of how toilets operate, and that in turn is based on some kids who did this at a high school when I was growing up in Kennewick. Does your toilet, does it work fairly well?
Yeah.
Okay, well then this definitely would have happened. Here's the deal. If you, and I'm not telling anybody to do this, but here's what these kids did. They layered a bunch of toilet paper into the bowl of a toilet, and then they had put some Lysol on top of it or whatever, you know, the hairspray, and then they lit it.
Yeah.
Fire starts in the toilet bowl. They flush it. The fire immediately gets sucked down into the pipes where it immediately turns to steam. The steam expands faster than the pipe can get rid of it, and it blows the entire toilet into little pieces, and it blows a huge section out of the wall.
Oh, gosh, I'm so glad I didn't.
They blew an entire bathroom wall into pieces.
Because I got like 900 people here in this complex.
Yeah, they would have known who you were.
Yeah,
you would have been everybody's favorite tenant. So.
Okay, you come to Ground Zero sometimes. I'd like to see you.
Oh, wait, let's see. Now, were you the woman at the bar a couple weeks ago? I was there. I stopped in to say hello to Clyde at the Ground Zero Lounge.
Dreadlocks?
Yeah. Yes. And I forget exactly how it was, but Clyde, I hope I can tell the story, but Clyde said he was doing on one of his rants. And again, I was there to talk to Clyde about something, and then I ended up having to leave because he was just obviously busy doing his thing. But Clyde was like, you know what we need in this country? We need a gay, black, crazy female president. And then you, TJ, sit at the mic and you're like, crazy black gay
that's me. My nickname is Militant Radical.
Fantastic.
All right, you rule, dude.
Thank you, TJ. All right, there you go. That's TJ, the Rick Emerson Show. Fantastic. There's Rick Emerson. All right. Let's see. Rick Emerson.
He's kind of going crazy.
We got to nothing today. We got to lots of things. We didn't get to this thing about the guy who got his testicle caught in the thing. I got nothing. All right. Well, all right. Rick Emerson is glad you made this part of your listening day. He encourages you to join us again tomorrow. Stephanie Miller, 6 to 8. Dennis Miller, 8 to 11. We'll be here 11 to 3 tomorrow. Like us next. Donna Mike at 7. Tomorrow, Dennis Pitzenbarger joins us and we count down into Listener Party 10. Sarah Dillon, Scotty J, Dave Zinn, myself, the Rick Emerson Show thanks you. Don't let the masters grind you down, and please try to help the retarded.